You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Bill Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues, just like the dude said there a moment ago. Solid conservative and just plain right. Well, hey, welcome to March 27th, Monday afternoon. It is a beautiful day outside. Boomer's got allergies, but he's still on the board.
I do. So I sound like two octaves lower today.
You like Barry White came in the studio running the board. Barry, thank you for bringing the love.
Thanks so much, guys.
Yeah, no doubt. Oh, hey, by the way, apologies. We had some kind of a technical gaffe last week. So Boomer and I were out of town Thursday and Friday. And for whatever reason, the same show played two other days while we were gone. So no, I did not have three birthdays.
I was going to say you had three birthdays.
I did not have three birthdays. but yeah, so total apologies. When I'm totally out of state, where both of us were out of state, it is hard to recoup. And you find out after the fact that, like, hey, you know, Phil, what happened? John from Huntsville, quick to point out that I had three birthdays in 1 week. So anyway, thank you to those of you who are being patient with us. I will be honest, I was at my grandbaby girl's first birthday, So all else is good in the world after that. Just saying. She's just beautiful little bitty baby girl. All right, hey, we got a great show laid on for you. 3 o'clock today, Justin Bogey from the Alabama Policy Institute is going to be on with us to talk about numbers, talk about money, talk about big fat money is what I'm going to be calling that one here in a few minutes. I'll tell you more about it. But Justin Bogey, 3 o'clock. He always does a great job sort of breaking down some of the finances, and we'll hear from him at three. So there's that. And then I got a triple dipper that says full of good stuff. So hit it.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right. The triple dipper. Three stories, three themes, if you will, that you have got to know as we run today's show. Number one is that conversation with Justin Bogey, plus some additional thoughts and considerations. Big fat money is what I'm calling it. Big fat money. So yeah, we got so much money, it's just fat. We just got big fat money. And we're going to talk about how it breaks down and what does it mean for the taxpayer as we just watch government spend big fat money. Number two on the triple dipper, race baiters and charlatans. Every once in a while I have to do this because you'll find multiple stories where it's like it's all the rage right now to either be a deceiver or to claim that racism is at the heart of whatever your cause celeb is. Well, race baiters and charlatans, you're going to hear about that, number two on the triple dipper. And then number three, there's a lot in the news right now about issues related to U.S. military readiness, military strength, military ability to respond. I'm just telling you, military-minded. That's what we're going to call number three today. We got to dive into this. Think about it. All of you who are currently active duty or veterans, or you have members of your family who are, you're going to be very interested in this one. Military-minded, number three on the triple dipper. All right, but let me jump over there to my comments there, because big fat money, well, that's kind of the theme for the first part of the show here. And you hear about the amount of money in government, right? But then sometimes you get a glimpse of it, and it can be both astounding and appalling. And in the midst of good times, fat times, one of the best and worst words or terms that you can hear in regard to government is budget surplus. Yeah. On the one hand, you'd much rather know that those in charge of your government engage the appropriations, the spending, and the revenue collection aspects of their jobs in such a way that the government doesn't end up declaring a budget shortfall, right? Never a good thing to find out the government didn't collect enough of our money and now it's going to cut essential services. By the way, notice I didn't say cutting government labor force, because that rarely ever happens. They cut services, things that you and I need. Budget shortfall is bad. Budget shortfall means lean times are upon us in some way. But then there's that original term that I named a moment ago, budget surplus, which a budget surplus can evidence that an economy is thriving, right? That revenues are up. Except that you have to consider that budget processes are first and foremost based upon projections, right? They should have foreseen the amount of revenue and budgeted accordingly. But hey, Even the most expert of opinions can go awry and sometimes in the positive direction, and suddenly, voila, extra money, budget surplus. Awesome. But is it possible? Is it possible for a budget surplus to be a bad thing? The short answer is yes. Basically, when the government has more money than it needed to operate, it means, in essence, they took too much money from the taxpayers. And when you combine a government surplus with a lean economy and inflation, well, at that point, the government begins to look a bit heartless. We're paying more at the store, more to the government, keeping less in our pockets, taking fewer vacations, while government winds up having extra to spend. Well, that's when budget surplus becomes a bad thing, when it's all about the Benjamins and nothing about the taxpayer. I'll never forget a couple of key examples that I witnessed firsthand. Like when I was in the Pentagon, I remember coming to the close of a fiscal year and the word came down from the comptroller, "Hey, year end's on us. We got to use it or lose it. Submit your capital expense list ASAP for approval and get those acquisitions in the hopper by the right date." Use it or lose it. What a concept. It basically means the powers that be are going to be appropriating the next year's allocations in the coming budget, and if you wind up with money left over, they might not give you the same amount, or, God forbid, they might give you less. Meanwhile, the average citizen runs their household and their private business just the opposite. In the private world, funds left over at the end of a year equals success. You can issue a shareholder dividend, take a trip to Disney World, or, here's a novel idea, put it in savings for possible lean times in the future. But I've seen it just the opposite, where they don't want to tell you they've got a surplus, where they hang on to it, where they squirrel it away. Government? Yeah, government. Some years back, as a part of my time in the state Senate, I chaired the Senate Committee on Fiscal Responsibility and Economic Development. A research committee was formed, of which I was a part, and designed to review government spending and various processes related to budgets. Well, I had recently discovered something that just chapped me. And I asked if I could handle a sidebar research study in that study commission to review departmental budgeting. So I did. And my secretary began putting together a notebook that just grew and grew and grew. And we nicknamed the notebook Big Bertha. And we left it out in my office for anyone to come review who wanted to do so. You see, I had discovered quite accidentally that one department that handled the state of Alabama's telecommunications actually billed other departments to handle their IT and telephone service. Can you imagine one government department billing another? Don't we already pay them? So the telecommunications department, I had learned, whose services, by the way, were not that great, made money every year. I mean made money, like profited. I got a copy of their records for the past 10 fiscal years, and I was shocked to learn that this one government department in Montgomery had a rollover account in which they carried money from one year to the next. So basically, this department appropriated funds through the budget processes run by the legislature. And then they billed the other departments while on the taxpayer dime, and the other departments just, you know, factored that into the budget requests and could care less. But the telecommunications department, they were not breaking even, not by a stretch. Oh, no, they were profiting. They had a running budget surplus sitting in the tens of millions. But yet they kept bellying up to the budget trough to get their annual tranche of taxpayer funds, and that self-licking ice cream cone just perpetuated itself. Get money from the legislature. Use what they give you to then bill money to other departments. Make a profit, squirrel it away in a side account. Don't tell anybody. Come back and get your appropriation the next year. So I decided to find out how many other departments had funds left over at the end of that year. And there were a lot of them, sitting on budget surpluses and still asking for more. So I made them all come in and provide input as to why that should be allowed to continue, and we shut down some of it. Now listen, I'm not so libertarian in my views that I don't believe that government has a role. It certainly does. Essential services like infrastructure, law enforcement, national defense, the court system, and a whole lot more, they have a definite place, and I know those things cost money. I'm also not one who believes that politicians should work for free. You get what you pay for when you do that. And most folks don't want to go bankrupt in public service, nor should they. But right now, Alabama is sitting on a massive budget surplus unlike anything we've ever experienced in the history of our state. But they are, if you will, the less seemly kind of surpluses. It's the kind that comes from having taken too much revenue during hard times. The goal should be at that point to be less about the Benjamins, more about the citizens. But as we speak, the governor has found herself so flush with our cash that she can begin to ask that it be given away to things like local parks and badly run tourist events and the growth of more and more government. So keep in mind that more money may seem better than less money, but more money taken from private citizens to fund government well in excess of what is needed should never result in a rollover account or a year-end profit. It should also never be a use-it-or-lose-it spending spree. Budget surpluses should be mandated to result in some form of revenue-sharing tax refund to the citizens of our state. And I don't mean a simple one-time token payment to appease the masses. I mean reform. I mean stop taking so much in the first place. Maybe set a cap and go from there. Maybe, just maybe, we'll see something this legislative session that tells us that our state government cares more about the people and less about the Benjamins. But so far, I ain't holding my breath. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, there you have it. We're going to break this down, by the way. I got some examples. You will not believe they have so much money right now that Governor Ivey's proposing to take education dollars to do things like, oh, I don't know, bail out the World Games in Birmingham. What? You heard me. We'll talk about it in detail. Big fat money is coming up next. Y'all stay tuned. We are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, I'm gonna just pause here in the show and tell you there's multiple pieces of breaking news that are worthy of bringing up right now. Not the least of which is, of course, the story's still unfolding, but apparently there was a school shooting in Nashville. And Boomer, you chime in if you want to, because I know that this is a school that has been in your wheelhouse a bit. Three adults and three children known to be killed, is what we understand. And its shooter is what, a female?
A female. What they're saying is around 28 years old, a female.
Possible former student.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's right there in the Green Hills area of Nashville.
And this is, was it Covenant Christian? Is that what it's called?
Covenant Christian.
Yeah.
Covenant School, Presbyterian Christian School.
Well, so you coach some of the kids there.
So I actually coached at a gymnastics gym close to there, and there were kids that came through there before. And I actually had a friend that has nieces and nephews there and a brother-in-law that teaches there, but they're all okay.
Still there now?
It's still there now.
Oh, wait, I missed that earlier. Your brother-in-law teaches there?
Not my brother-in-law, my friend's brother-in-law.
I got you. Okay.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, still, just it makes it very personal when you see a story.
Oh, I know.
I mean, so often we see this, oh, it's in Texas. Oh, it's horrible. Oh, it's in Chicago. Oh, it's in California. No, it's in a place where you've actually walked in the halls.
Just miles away from, you know, where we used to live.
Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. Well, blessings and prayers to that community.
Absolutely.
Story still unfolding. But so, yeah, the bottom line is that we know right now the active shooter situation, that the police did respond quickly is what we understand so far. And they engaged the shooter, took her out. It was a female, roughly 28 years old, they say, possible former student. And she had come in with two long guns and one pistol. Mm-hmm. And so this was not a random, I pulled it out of my purse because I was angry kind of shooting. She apparently came in with intent to do this kind of harm. Mm-hmm. And so we'll let you know if we hear more. The police has gave their first blush kind of assessment of the situation, which was very short on facts. The most that we know so far is the shooter was a female, 28 years old-ish. And possibly, I said, a former student. We'll keep you updated on that one. Another interesting story, you may recall, and Boomer, I didn't even talk about this. So Boomer and I have both been out of town. We're catching up with each other right now. But we had the wife of Officer Ben Darby from Huntsville, Keelan Darby. She was on the show, what, a month ago?
About a month ago,
I believe. Thereabouts. Well, you know, the big thing was his conviction was on appeal. And the appellate court found in his favor. That is found out, I think, Friday afternoon, maybe. But I've already been in touch with her. She'll be coming back on the show here hopefully very soon. So Officer Ben Darby, you may recall, was responding to an active Well, the guy was basically, they were saying it might be suicide by cop, but he had a gun or a flare gun, I forget which, in his hand. And Officer Darby responded, and, you know, the city of Huntsville stood by him. He was a Huntsville PD guy. His wife, Keelan Darby, who's been advocating on his behalf just adamantly now for you know, the better part of a year and a half or more. She's also in law enforcement in Decatur, I believe. Anyway, she came on the show and talked about the fact that he responded in the way he was trained, and he was convicted of manslaughter. And anyway, the appellate court found. Now, here's the thing, and what we're going to unpack for you more at another time is that apparently the appellate court did not come back and find per se in his favor. They didn't vacate the charges. They didn't vacate the case altogether. The charges were not dismissed. It was reversed and remanded. They call it reverse means there was an issue at trial that caused it to be sent back. Remanded means sent back with instructions to do it again, do it differently. So he was denied certain jury charges, which is when you tell the jury what they should consider while they're, you know, deliberating. Here's the law. You as a juror, you will consider this. If you heard the evidence that says so-and-so, you must consider that in light of the law, it says you would find this way. Well, there were certain charges that his team had requested that were denied by the judge. And among other things, I believe one of the main issues was the judge denied them a jury charge that required the jury to take into account his training and his response based upon protocols established in his training. Well, the appellate court found that it needs to come back. Unfortunately, he'll have to stand trial again, apparently, but stand trial under a different set of circumstances. And by the way, stand trial outside of all of the furor that was, you know, that was around the defund the police movement and all the civil unrest at the time. And, oh, by the way, also outside of the whole COVID stops you from being able to stand in front of the jury yourself because nobody can be around each other. It's too scary. Well, that's all going away. He's going to have a full trial, it appears, and the jury charges will be considered this time. And then the last one we got, on a much lighter note, is that my bracket got totally torn all to pieces. My bracket is in shreds.
I think most people, man, I can't even speak. I think most people's bracket is out.
Especially if you're from the SEC.
Right.
You just quit being a part of this bracket. Unless you're the lovely McQueen, who's now in fourth place with a chance to win the overall.
She's in third place.
Third place.
Yeah, and she has a chance to win because I did some digging, and I think she was the only one that chose Miami to move on from the Final Four. So if UConn versus Miami, if she gets that, she could win. But, man, I'll tell you this. There's someone else. It was Michael, and there's a lot of numbers after it. Michael 661. I don't know, but he's down there and he chose UConn. So
he's the only one that chose UConn.
Yeah, I think he's in 35th place right now. So he actually could win everything.
So he could be in 35th place right now and then come out number one.
Yep.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
And we got new t-shirts.
We got new t-shirts.
So if you're watching the video stream, the Boomer is wearing the t-shirt and it's, we got these kind of like military style, OD green, what do you say? Right Side Ruffian t-shirts.
Yes.
Nice.
And they're comfy.
All right. Well, listen, more to come. It's going to be a full day. And we'll keep you updated on breaking news as it goes. And McQueen might win the bracket. How crazy. What's going on? All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. All you Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That'd be Alabama. I'm talking about the show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back on over to Gadsden, and even parts of Georgia and Tennessee and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. I'm seeing texts coming in. Hang on a second. So there is only one person in the right side bracket has a chance. Chris from Gadsden saying only one person in the whole bracket. No, there are a few. One of which is our very own McQueen.
Just one person in our studio.
In our studio. Yes. I'm pretty sure that would not be me.
Me neither.
Although you're a much higher. What are you ranked right now?
I'm at 17. So I made it up.
You and I swapped places.
We swapped.
I went from number 4 to number 7 to number 21. I cascaded at that point. It was like falling off a cliff. And of course, anybody who had picked Alabama got crushed. Over the weekend, and that was a serious crushing right there, man. I think that the miracle season just didn't quite have the flavor they expected it to have at the very end.
Right.
But anyway,
it's okay.
Dadgummit. Even though I'm an Auburn fan, and I went out early on that one.
No Iron Bowl championship.
No Iron Bowl basketball game. Anyway, all right, a lot of stuff coming to the show today. I got to tell you, we're gonna kick off this whole discussion about big fat money. So if you heard my monologue a few minutes ago, all about the Benjamins. Here's the thing. I want to reiterate the point. There is nothing wrong with a government having a surplus. It might mean good governance. It's possible that a budget surplus is because some things were done right. They streamlined some things. They made some changes. They basically made some efficiencies. They may have consolidated. Anyway, all said and done, there are ways that government can do it right and end up with a surplus, and I get that. I love that. In fact, we did some of that when I think some of the surpluses that we're seeing now are some of the result of what we did 10 years ago and thereabouts to try and streamline processes, consolidate departments, and change the way we do business. You haven't heard the word proration now since Republicans took over in 2010. It was prorating all the time. And by the way, proration, if you're not familiar, is a term that basically means we budgeted this amount, and then it got too expensive, and we realized we weren't going to have the right amount of money to do it, so the governor had to cut the budget. They prorated the budget down. And I remember one time, Governor Riley, right before we came into office in 2010, he had to cut the general fund budget like 40%, if I recall. It was awful. But all that to say, government can have a surplus at times for the right reasons. When it gets a little dicey is when you see government having a surplus while all of us in the private sector are struggling to make ends meet. When you see inflation rising, when you see rates going up, when you see new gas taxes being put in, when you see businesses being shut down like in the pandemic, when you see basically the workforce participation rate, the labor force participation rate is ebbing at a low. When all those things are happening, but the government has more money than it ever expected to have, something's wrong. Now, some of what they're spending this year is indeed federal relief dollars. They're spending some of what came in that they didn't ask for. It just showed up, and they got to spend it. I got issues with the way that was done at the federal side anyway, but nonetheless, it's here, got to spend it. The part that I do have a bit of a beef with is that the state government, while the rest of the private sector that pays for state government has struggled to get by, has had lean times, has been at 40-year inflation, and has had any number of roadblocks thrown in the way of its productivity, when the private sector is having that much trouble and they still come up with a revenue surplus, like we're looking at $2.7, $2.8 billion, I believe, in actual budget surplus, not including the money from COVID relief in D.C. When they have that much money, it means they took too much to begin with. Somewhere in there, you would love to believe they'd look at it and go, dang, fellas, didn't mean to take a 10 when all I needed was a 5. Let's give some back. That would be the answer. Or at least pretend you're doing it to some. Now, the idea that Governor Ivey goes, I shall give them a $400 check and they will be happy with me. That's just crap. And it just is. There is no way that can be looked at as being a reasonable modicum of sharing in the wealth, if you know what I mean. And when I say sharing in the wealth, I'm not talking about in the socialism, distribution of wealth. I'm talking about giving back what they took from you. So if you're a taxpayer and they want to give you a paltry sum, but they're keeping a huge tranche of their own to do more things with government, which is exactly what's happening. Well, it's not just Alabama, by the way. It's around the entire nation. So here's an article that I've got from Fortune Magazine. Came out right at the end of last year. Headline, your state is getting rich off the inflation that's making you poorer. It does not mince words. In fact, the chief economist and public finance researcher at the University of Utah, who is quoted in the article, a guy named Phil Dean, he says, this is what I call a sugar high. So he's saying state governments are on a sugar high right now. He says growth rates are definitely not sustainable. State governments, it says, emerging from the coronavirus pandemic, built up historic cash surpluses as inflation in prices and wages drove up sales and income tax collections. So here's the thing. Think about this. 40-year inflation, right? How much is a loaf of bread right now? How much are eggs right now? How much is bacon right now? So if you're looking at spending more for something that you always have to buy anyway, you're going to buy toilet paper, you might pay a third more than you used to, right? 17% increase on bacon. These are staples. These are things you just buy as a matter of course. And if you're going to spend more on it because of inflation, guess what? Sales tax is calculated by the dollar. So sales tax goes up. So as inflation goes up, so does the amount of money the government takes. So what used to cost you $5, the state would collect 4% of that, right? So 4 cents on the dollar, 20 cents. Now that thing costs you $6. Guess what? Now they're not just collecting the 20 cents they have, collecting on 4 cents on the times. So that's where we are. The more the prices go up, the more tax we have to pay when we buy milk and bread. And the government has a surplus. So when you're at a 40-year inflationary high and you wonder, how's the government have so much money? Because a big part of that is revenue based upon sales tax and income tax. Now, here's the other thing. Because of inflation going up, many employers are having to actually increase the amount that they're paying their staff. Sounds cool, right? No, it's not. It's not hardly keeping up with the pace of inflation, but nonetheless, they are increasing wages. So wage growth grows up. Cool. Guess what goes up also? Income tax. So if you live in a state like Alabama that has a income tax, unlike Florida, which has no state income tax, if you're paying income tax on an increased wage and you're paying a sales tax on an increased price, guess what you're doing? You're sending more money to your state capital. That's one of the main reasons why we have a surplus right now in state government. Well, this article goes on to say many states right now are reaping another reward. They're banking millions of dollars off those surpluses as the Federal Reserve is fighting inflation with higher interest rates. That's the other thing. If the states have managed their portfolios, if they have surpluses and they keep those things in money-making type accounts, if they're buying federal bonds, guess what went up? The rates went up on federal bonds. Or if they're selling their bonds, maybe they're selling them at a higher rate, getting a higher yield or higher return. Either way, what we're seeing is inflation is causing state government to make more money. While you and I are out here going, dang, eggs are expensive. Man, you see how much diapers cost? We just went this past weekend to my son and daughter-in-law's house to visit our grandbabies. Little bitty grandbaby girl turned 1 year old. Little bitty grandbaby girl is finishing up on bottles. Boomer, you're not so far removed from that. You know the deal.
Oh, yeah.
That formula is expensive, man.
Man.
They're right now talking about saving like $300 a month because they're not having to buy formula.
I get it.
Yeah. Ooh. Or can you get it?
I mean exactly.
Yeah. But It's amazingly stressful right now for a young family, or for an old family. But it's amazingly stressful right now to try and keep up with the price of inflation unless you're a state government and then you're raking it in. What the heck? Doesn't that seem counterintuitive? So when that happens, you would love to believe. And by the way, I was shocked to find in this article, this makes me. So Massachusetts, where'd it go? Here it is. Apparently Massachusetts has had surging tax revenue. Part of the article here. Like Texas has a $30 billion surplus. We've got California. Well, California wound up with a deficit because they just blew it. But Massachusetts, here's this piece of this article. Surging tax revenue in Massachusetts this year triggered a seldom-used state law requiring $2.9 billion to be returned to taxpayers. So they have a state law. If they hit a surplus X amount of dollars, they have to give part of it back no matter what. They just have to. I'm not sure why we don't have that in Alabama. I can tell you right now, there's never been surpluses like we have right now in Alabama, ever, ever, until now. So yeah, large cash balances in Massachusetts allowed the state to collect nearly $57 million of interest in October alone, six times the amount earned during the entire 2021 fiscal year. That's amazing. That shouldn't be happening. That we should not be watching state government get rich while the rest of the world out here is fighting for scraps and doing what they can to pay for milk and bread. And we shouldn't also be seeing, and by the way, I just please, nobody out there in Right Side Radio land forget that right before the pandemic, the current legislature raised your gas taxes. And so not only did you have to pay more at the pump, then you had to pay more at the stores because of inflation. And have they given you any meaningful tax relief in the last several years? That would, the answer to that would be no. No, because it's big fat money and they are fat on it right now. Now, there's some good folks in Montgomery right now talking about the possibility of defying the governor's wishes, which good for them because the legislative branch is a co-equal separate branch of government. I say go for it. I say put her on the hook, man. Get out there and say, you know what? Here's the deal, governor. We know you don't want to do anything but little token rebate payments. But we're going to suggest it's finally time to get rid of that sales tax on groceries. We're going to suggest that maybe we do that plus a rebate. Or we're going to suggest that we do away with some portion of the income tax or whatever and send it across the street and make her sign it. That's the way it ought to work. All right, Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We'll do a first break right now. We'll come right back. Keep moving on this topic, big fat money. And then top of the hour, we'll get a call from Justin Bogey from the Alabama Policy Institute. He's a fiscal analyst who actually used to work in Montgomery in the legislative fiscal office. We'll hear from him on his thoughts about some of the crazy things Governor Ivey's proposing in her budget. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Sitting here in the studio, way overdressed for radio. Had to do some lawyering this morning, and my lawyer in uniform is still on. But anyway, hey, glad to be with you. Way overdressed for radio. But so let me for those who don't already know, I'm going to give you a quick refresher on the really strange way that Alabama does budgeting. So we're one of the only states in the nation that has what I refer to as split budgeting. Everything in the world education is in one budget. We call it the ETF, the Education Trust Fund, all right? And then everything else in the world it takes to run the state, like mental health, state troopers, the court system, just the actual, you know, executive branch and legislative branch of government, all of that. Everything else in the world besides education is in the other budget, and we call that the general fund. So you have two budgets, general fund and the ETF, the Education Trust Fund. You also, by the way, are living in the state that has the most earmarked budget in the world, it seems like. Some estimates put us at somewhere around 90, somewhere between 88 to 91% of our available revenues are already earmarked, and the legislature has very little control over where they go. So you can't just go, wait, we got a surplus over here in that thing, we're going to move it over there to fill that hole. You don't have that. You don't have that true appropriation and budgeting process. Now, we do budget, absolutely. Two budgets, actually. But then here's the other thing. You can't cross-pollinate. So when you have the Education Trust Fund flush with cash, which is the way it always used to be, because the teachers union got it fixed in their favor years ago. So sales tax and all the growth taxes, we call them. Growth taxes are the ones that go up in a good economy and apparently go up in a bad economy, now we're finding out. But they go up in a good economy. The growth taxes, those generally speaking, feed the ETF, the Education Trust Fund. The flat taxes, the ones that are stable but never change, like property tax and that kind of stuff, those tend to feed the general fund. It's not 100% that those ways, but yes, that's roughly it. So in a good economy, education budget always does better. Right now, both budgets have a surplus. That's almost unheard of. But in looking at it, you're not allowed to cross-pollinate. Very rarely, I mean, you can find some things, like you could say the CHIPS program, which is Children's Health Insurance Program, like a Medicaid portion there. Because it's children and it impacts school services and that kind of stuff too, you can say, well, all right, ETF, we can justify some of that helping kids because kids are students and it's a K through 12 and then higher ed budget also. But all that to say, for the most part, you don't cross-pollinate. You're not going to find the Department of Corrections, largely speaking, being funded in the education budget unless you can justify it as an education matter, like the educational programs for inmates. Okay, I get it. That works. But you can't just go pay the office of the Department of Corrections to build a new prison out of the education budget. It doesn't work that way. Unless, of course, you're so flush with cash that you've got big fat money. Because right now, people are bellying up to the trough like you would not believe. Right now, a story on AL.com that came out just in the last couple of days. Alabama's massive education budget now includes things like money for the World Games, an airport, the Port of Mobile. What does this get? I can't tell you how many times down in Montgomery, we would literally be haggling over a way to find a piece of the surplus in the education budget to help bring up the general fund budget, which was woefully underfunded. And now we're looking at situations where the governor sends over her budget, right? So the governor and the finance director, her staff, they put together their wish list, if you will, put together their budget. And then they send it across the street to the legislature. It's presented usually around the first of the session. Sometimes you know in advance what's coming. Sometimes you don't. In this case, it sounds like they really didn't. The governor just sent it over. Here it is. And as they get it, they're looking through it. They're like, what? So right now, the education budget includes $31 million to the Mobile Airport Authority. What? What? It's for economic development. What's that got to do? Okay. $25 million for the Port of Alabama. What? Yep. And by the way, it doesn't say for education. It says for economic development and coal loading and unloading equipment. Yeah, that fits the education budget. How about this? $25 million to the Montgomery County Commission for Economic Development. You know what that's for? In part, it's for a water park. What? Yes. Here's one that's maddening for you. $5 million to the city of Birmingham to pay off the debt for the World Games. How is that in the education budget? Well, there's more. We got plenty of them. And we come right back with Justin Bogey from the Alabama Policy Institute. We'll talk through it. Y'all stay tuned. We got some big, fat money. all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national, covering down on all the issues like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, hey, welcome to hour number two. We are still in number one of the Triple Dipper. Big fat money is what I'm calling it, and that's where we are right now. We got big fat money down in Montgomery. Like more than we've ever seen perhaps in the history of the state of Alabama in terms of a pro rata share of budget increases. It's unbelievable the amount of money they have down there. Now, a tranche of that came from federal relief dollars, but they've also just got a flat-out budget surplus. Like they've collected more money than they expected. And the issue I have with that is that here we are with the private sector facing extremely lean, difficult times, 40-year highs in terms of inflation, and government comes up with a surplus, and we don't hear much about some of it coming back. Now, what happens when you have big, fat money is you get all kinds of people bellying up to the trough to get a piece of it, things you never would have expected. So without further ado, let me do this. I'm going to bring in Justin Bogey, the Director of Fiscal Analysis for the Alabama Policy Institute, also a contributor to Fiscal Analysis for 1819 News. Justin has a long history working with the numbers. Used to work for the Legislative Fiscal Office in Montgomery, spent time in D.C., spent time at the Heritage Foundation, and I'm glad to bring him on the show. Justin, how are you doing today?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing well. It's good to be with you again.
You too, man. Thanks for spending some time with us. Appreciate it. So I laid the groundwork for this segment I'm doing called Big Fat Money right now, and it's galling to me some of what's included, especially in the education budget, that Governor Ivey's sending over that doesn't even seem to relate to education. Tell us what you know.
Right, and most of this that we're discussing, it's coming from the supplemental bill that she's proposing. It's going to spend about $2.8 billion of the ETF surplus. Really some interesting stuff going on there. You know, there's some maybe not so bad things there. There's almost $1 billion for a potential tax rebate for Alabamians. I certainly don't feel like that's the best way to spend the money. I'd rather see permanent tax reform, but, you know, not terrible. But then you get into some more interesting things. You know, for example, there's $360 million to cover the cost of inflation. When the budget was passed last year for the current year that we're in, you know, inflation was already at basically a record high. So it shouldn't have really come to a surprise to anyone that inflation was going to be a problem. And then you have some more interesting things. You know, I know you've alluded to there's $31 million in here to relocate airport operations in Mobile, for example. Yeah. There's about $25 million for the port of Alabama, which already receives an appropriation every year from the gas tax increase that we saw a few years ago. And then, you know, obviously this $25 million to Montgomery is getting a lot of talk because it's basically to redevelop an area around a new whitewater park that they're constructing. So lots of interesting things going on. And again, this is the education budget. You wonder how a lot of these things really relate to education.
Well, the short answer is they don't relate to education. And I can remember in much leaner times when I was in Montgomery and we didn't have surpluses to work with, there were times, and I remember talking to Senator Tripp Pittman because he and Senator Orr, swapped places as one carried the general fund, which was always sucking wind, and the other one had the education fund. And when they switched places, Tripp was talking about how he said, I told Arthur, if I ever go to you asking for money from your budget, make sure you tell me no. He said, so I went to him and asked for money and he told me no. But you can't cross-pollinate usually, and you also can't have non-education expenses in the education budget unless you can find a nexus to education. I don't see a nexus in airport operations or whitewater parks.
I don't either. Most of this seems to be more economic development kind of uses. You know, there are some things in there that are loosely education-related in terms of workforce training and, you know, there's prisoner education, some like that that are at least loosely related to education. But, you know, I don't know how redeveloping an area of Montgomery for Whitewater Park really is. And you know, I'm from Montgomery originally. I've been in that area, and I'm not saying it doesn't need redevelopment, but you know, that really seems like something that the taxpayers in Montgomery or Montgomery County should be paying, and not citizens across the state. And you know, the same for this airport relocation and some of the other things. And again, another interesting thing was in here is about $30 million for electric vehicle training for workers, which has become a priority of Governor Ivey's. When you know, it doesn't seem like there's really a huge demand for electric vehicles in Alabama at this point. So you have to wonder again if that's really a great use of taxpayer dollars.
No, and I don't think it is. And I was kind of heartened to see that one of the reports that I read on these proposals had State Senator Orr and even Danny Garrett, who's the House chairman, saying, yeah, we saw this for the first time and we're asking questions like, who are these people getting money and they need to come in here and present themselves? Because they had budget hearings, and yet this still appears to have caught the legislature off guard. Am I right?
Right. I don't think anybody expected this. You know, they expected so obviously increases in the education trust fund budget. And you know, we had a big surplus last year. They appropriated about a $1.3 billion education trust fund surplus. But you really didn't see a lot of projects like this. There were certainly capital projects at universities and, you know, the technology fund that the state has. There was a lot of money going towards that. But again, you can relate all those back to education in one way or another. Whereas this year, you know, with a surplus twice the size, it just seems like there's a lot of money going other places. So, you know, I hope that they really are concerned with this and that they'll push back on this some and you know, hopefully a lot of this won't make it into the final bill, but you know how Montgomery works, and anything can happen.
Well, yeah, and I'm looking at so I can guarantee you right now. I mean, I know the Port of Alabama already has its own lobbying firm; they're hard at work on that money. The Mobile Airport Authority probably hired a lobbying firm just to get this $31 million, and then you know, some of this stuff I look at and go, okay. I get it. You're establishing a hydroelectric workforce training center. Well, we could call that education. But then again, you look at some of this stuff and you think, okay, Montgomery, if you're going to do this for economic development and you're doing it to, you say, renovate the areas in and around Maxwell Boulevard, well, don't they already get a portion of the gas tax? And didn't they also get some money from the COVID relief dollars that came down from D.C.?
Sure, absolutely. You know, Montgomery obviously got a pretty big share of ARPA funding. And I even saw a report today that indicated, I think it was the head of the Montgomery County Commission had said that, you know, students would be able to come in and kind of watch them as they construct this water park. Oh, and it would be a opportunity for engineering education, which you know, seemed to kind of be a new response that they had developed today. But it's certainly hard for most people, I think, to make that connection.
Well, I think what we're looking at here is maybe they're setting up, you know, the Artful Dodgers school of pickpocketing government, because that's what they're doing. Is they're finding artful ways to get in there and grab some money at a time of surplus. And all this does, I would look at some of this and go, and I can see that not happening, and that could all be a rebate and or refund to the people of Alabama.
Right. I mean, you know, as I mentioned, about $967 million or so has been set aside for a tax rebate. Well, if you took a lot of these other projects out of that, you know, you could probably have a tax cut or some formation of a combination of a cut and a rebate that's easily double that size. And, you know, for most people in Alabama who are struggling with the rising costs of groceries and, you know, gas and everything else, that's going to have a much more direct impact on them than many of these projects ever will. You know, how many people across the state will benefit from these? Certainly, if you're local to those areas, you may see some benefit. But, you know, the money really represents taxes that were collected from everyone in the state. So it should have a more statewide benefit than just helping people in certain areas.
So let me ask you, and Justin, if you remember, I mean, you worked at LFO, the Legislative Fiscal Office, if I'm not mistaken, in years past. Of course, I was down there in the legislature. And my recollection is there's a constitutional division between funds. That's why we have our education budget and general funds separately. And are they required to pass any kind of special appropriation bill to be able to do this cross-pollination of things that aren't education related? Do you recall any processes like that?
I do not recall anything specific. You know, it's just if when they have a surplus like this, they have to do a supplemental bill. But again, you know, if it's coming out of education trust fund revenues, which are specifically earmarked for education, then certainly seems to me that there should be a direct link to education to spend that money.
Yeah, I would agree. And there's going to have to be some enabling legislation, I think, though, somewhere in there that explains the reasons why. Or at the very least, they ought to have a public hearing, and anybody can request a public hearing on this expenditure before it goes through committee. Hey, before I lose you, and this was not something I had planned on, but I caught the article after I'd already texted you about coming on. Have you seen the deal with the cost of the Elmore County prison, like doubling to about $1 billion for one prison? Have you seen that?
I have. So last week or in the last couple of weeks, they approved additional spending of up to $352 million. So it's up over $950 million. Now for the total cost of the Elmore County prison, you know, which, you know, my understanding is they haven't made a tremendous amount of progress on. It's through the kind of clearing the dirt phase, but they haven't made it a lot further. And obviously we're on this deadline of July 1st, 2025 to meet federal requirements or otherwise the federal government could potentially come in and take over prison. So it sounds like it's behind schedule and it's over budget. And, you know, we still have another prison that's supposed to be constructed down in Escambia County, and I think they're even further behind on it. And, you know, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if they come back and say the costs of that have increased as well.
Yeah, and it boggles my mind. At one point in that article, Bill Poole, Finance Director Bill Poole, former member of the House, who's a good guy, I like Bill Poole, but he said something to the effect of, we hope to know by this summer how much the project will actually cost. And I thought, wait a minute, we're like a year and a half into this thing. What do you mean you want to find out how much? And I, notwithstanding inflation, I have a hard time believing that inflation ticked that thing up by about a $450 million uptick.
Yeah, and from that comment that he made, it sounds like it could go up even more. Like this extra $352 right now is just sort of a moving target. And when it's all said and done, it may end up being more expensive than that. And, you know, certainly inflation is part of that. But, you know, I think people of Alabama deserve answers and really need to know what's going on with this and the reason for these cost overages and if it's really justified.
Well, listen, man, I don't know if the Policy Institute has any plans to go down to Montgomery and do any, you know, speaking or lobbying the issues or whatever else on this fiscal matter. But if you do, let us know, okay?
Sounds good. We will.
All right. Hey, Justin Bogey, Director of Fiscal Analysis for the Alabama Policy Institute and contributor to 1819 News. We appreciate your time, man. Have a great day.
Thanks very much. You too.
All right. Well, there's a guy who knows numbers like the back of his hand, and he knows where the bones are buried in Montgomery and in D.C. for that matter. And he's calling their bluff on this. He's basically saying this stuff doesn't match up. It doesn't equate to education spending, at least much of it. But like anything else, the governor can ask and the legislature can pass. And if they do, she can sign. And I don't know that there's any constitutional provision that prevents it from happening at that point unless someone decides to file suit as a taxpayer and claim that this is a process that has some way violated constitutional provisions. That's an interesting dynamic. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will take the break right now. We'll come back from this break, kind of put a lid on this one and move into the next part of the Triple Dipper, Race Baiters and Charlatans. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid and conservative and just plain right. I'm talking about saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, listen, the text lines are open. I forgot to say that earlier. 833-687-4448. You want to text the show? That's 833-68-RIGHT. That's the number. You can text it or call it. We'll take them. But yeah, we'd love to have your input. Pegleg Dave from Gurley, Alabama, he texted in earlier and he said, "Hey guys, why haven't you updated the podcast since last Wednesday?" I told him we were out of town, man, but we will have new episodes up today. And he says, "Thanks, brother." So yeah, be aware, the podcast is going crazy. So where are we at, Boomer? You said big numbers.
130,300.
Whoop whoop!
Yes.
Okay, that's worth some applause.
That's definitely worth some applause.
Thank you, very much. Thank you. We'll be in the area all day. Okay. Thank you. All right. So yeah, that's very cool. If you wanna catch part of a show again, or you wanna catch a clip and send it to somebody for them to hear it, or whatever, or you miss something, you wanna go back and grab it. Then our podcast, we take the show every single day and we upload the podcasted version of the show so you can listen to it, like I said, or send it to somebody else. And then that has been downloaded 130,300, I think you said, times. Man, that's cool. And then we got the other part of the Right Side Multiverse, which is the Right Life podcast with Boomer and McQueen.
Yes, and it's going great, too.
You dropped another two last week.
Yes,
two
we
more
did.
Coming up this week.
That's right.
I'm digging it. all right, so, yeah, that's big doings. Other things that are on the text string, people who have been texting in already, JT from Lacey Springs says, with regards to that tax rebate, he says, while money is money, a $400 tax rebate is somewhat of an insult. That falls short of the food tax annually that for a lot of families. I would agree, JT. Racing from Hawaii, listening in right now, just says, do away with illegals. And he says, Biden opened our treasury for illegals. Meanwhile, considering cutting COLA for military families, do away with illegals. I'm with you. What else have I got in here? Bruce from Hazel Green. Not a fan of Governor Ivey, apparently, says, Governor Ivey showing her true colors. She's blue. She's not a conservative or a real Republican. We do not need to be bailing out Birmingham for the World Games. So if you're not familiar with that story, let me grab that one real quick. Let me see. Yeah. Yeah. So story on AL.com and also in 1819news.com is that Of the $8.8 billion proposal for the education budget, there's a bunch of stuff thrown in there that people are like, what is that and why is it happening? Part of which is $5 million to be expended for the World Games. $5 million for the World Games in Birmingham. That makes no sense whatsoever. That's a bailout. That's called, hey, Birmingham, you hosed it, but we're going to give you some money and make it better. Now, right now, local governments around that area are already chipping in. And if they want to say this is a part of state tourism, I get it, but state tourism is not part of the education budget. So it's a little crazy. If they're going to say we have to be stuck with this split budgeting, and they're going to say that we have to, you know, non-cross-pollinate the budgets, then $5 million out of the education budget for the World Games, I don't even see anything there about an, you know, educational opportunity. They're not even trying to pretend. They're saying, you know what, we just need some money, please. That's what's happening. And then that whole thing about Whitewater Park in Montgomery, and the Montgomery County Commission, 1819 News reports, would receive $25 million for economic development around the Montgomery Whitewater Recreation Facility. And they say they're going to use it to help, you know, dress up Maxwell Boulevard, which leads to Maxwell Air Force Base. Okay, I get it. How is that an education budget expenditure? Short answer, it's not. It is not. They got just big, fat money right now down yonder in Montgomery, and they are just bellying up to the trough trying to get them a piece. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Number two in the Triple Dipper, race baiters and charlatans. You Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. I need this right here. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama, in my opinion. And I'm talking about this show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. And Boomer, when we expand our footprint again, I'm gonna have a hard time retooling that intro.
You are gonna have such a hard time. You're gonna slip. And I'm say, like, nope, that's not right.
Yeah, from way down south of where are we?
We're
now?
Just ways.
We're down south. Everywhere. We're everywhere. We're touching water. I don't know what to say. All right, listen, we're gonna move to number two on the Triple Dipper. I got somebody on here, by the way, that wants, they didn't bother telling me their name. They just want to give me their advice that it shouldn't be called the Triple Dipper anymore. It ought to be called the Triple Play. In their opinion, that just sounds better. And
they're baseball fans.
Okay. Yeah, I'm an ice cream fan. Triple Dipper. Okay, there we go. Brian from Huntsville wants to know, is the Whitewater Park with our tax money going to have Hillary cut the opening ribbon? That would fit, though, brother. I'm going to tell you. That would fit. Somebody else who's never texted in before, named Terry. Hey, by the way, Terry, tell us where you're from. Let me back up. If you're texting the line for the very first time, and I didn't say this earlier, 833-687-4448, text in your first name and where you're from, then we'll put you in the system. Right now we got Terry, and Terry, tell us where you're from. It says, is a potential tax rebate going to be taxable for federal and state? It's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it. I do not believe it's a taxable income, but I could be wrong. It may well be a taxable at the federal level at the very least, but Terry, I don't have an answer for you, but since it's a tax rebate, it's like a refund. It's like something was overpaid, but I can't guarantee you. I am not a CPA. I'm an attorney, and that's why I'm not a CPA. But I tell you what, if I find out, I will put it on there. Terry from Athens. Oh, he's texting in. Oh, there we go. Appreciate you, Terry from Athens. We got you in the system now, man. Where am I? I lost my place. Oh, got another one that just texted in. That one's being checked on right now by Boomer. Thank you very much. JT from Lacey Springs says, since hitting 100,000 podcasts in December, it's growing like 10,000 a month. That's right. That's back when we did the push-up and donut challenge.
Way back when.
Way back when. Way back a long time ago when the pioneers were still listening to radio. We had a running bet as to when we would hit 100,000 downloads of the podcast. The winner had to got to eat a donut while the other person did push-ups in the studio.
Yes.
And then we wound up both losing because we were both wrong. Did we get there quicker or later? I don't remember.
I think we got there just a few days late.
Yeah.
Just a couple days. That's it.
We got there, though.
But we got there.
And we both ate donuts and did push-ups.
That's right.
Awesome. All right, number two of the Triple Dipper, race baiters and charlatans. So all the rage right now, and I know you've seen it, good Lord. All the rage right now is if you don't like the outcome of something, anything, I don't know, your oatmeal wasn't hot enough. Racism. Or you're looking at life in general and you're thinking, I should have had an A on that test. Racism. Sexism. Ableism. Something. Mysticism. I don't know. Some ism. Well, so I remind you, by the way, of what does Tucker Carlson call him? Juicy Smollett? I can't say that and feel good about myself, so I'm going to go ahead and just call him Jesse. Jesse Smollett. I mean, this because it just makes me feel uncomfortable calling a man. Anyway, all right, Jesse Smollett. So you may remember the whole Jesse Smollett debacle. So apparently, was it in Chicago? Yeah, apparently in Chicago. At 2:30 in the morning, man needed himself a Subway sandwich, left the house in frigid weather, went on out, got himself a sub sandwich at 2:30 in the morning, walking the streets of Chicago by himself, attacked by two white guys wearing MAGA hats, telling him this is MAGA country, beat him up and put a noose around his neck, and then let him go. Because it's Chicago, and that's certainly the kind of place that MAGA hat-wearing people walk around at 2:30 in the morning. That place hadn't voted for Trump, God almighty. So, yeah, so Smollett made the whole thing up. And what I have not seen yet, Boomer, you haven't seen it, have you? The documentary with the two guys who were hired, who, by the way, were black.
No.
They're really? these two actors that Smollett had met at some point, and they they're originally African born actors. They're like big old honking guys. I mean, they work out, you can tell. And he hired them to stage the thing, but then he told the story that they were white when they were so obviously black. On top of that, they are now telling their own story and having a big time with it. And then he told us to stand over here, and we did.
And we did it.
And I got paid.
Oh, wow.
So Jussie Smollett's legal team, has filed their appeal brief. So you may recall he was convicted. Convicted and found guilty of 5 of the 6 charges of disorderly conduct against him. By the way, he's lucky to have disorderly conduct as the actual charges. I'm pretty sure that was a downgrade of the charges. But the whole world stood on its edge. You know, literally, the liberal mainstream media just raked everybody over the coals who didn't buy into the idea that Jussie Smollett was assaulted by MAGA hat-wearing white guys at 2:30 in the morning while all he wanted was a sub sandwich in the cold Chicago rain. Didn't work out. Smollett's legal team has now argued his renewed prosecution violated Smollett's due process rights. In addition, the circuit court judge, they say, improperly denied the defense motion for substitution of a judge for cause because of explicit bias towards Smollett, rendering every subsequent ruling and action in the case null and void. So we'll see. I mean, Smollett only spent 6 days in jail, and then he got out pending appeal. We'll see where this goes, but I'm going to tell you right now, that guy's a charlatan, a race baiter and a charlatan, and he needs to go to jail. There's no room in a nation right now that it was, and he was making so much use of the George Floyd issues or incident sentiments. He was just basically banking on his career getting a boost by being the guy who survived racism, because I'm the first openly gay black man wandering the streets at 2:30 in the morning looking for a Subway sandwich. Well, my glass ceiling breaker, I needed a sandwich at 2:30 in the morning, and I couldn't even get there because racism. So he was both a racist and a charlatan, a race baiter and a fraudster. But it doesn't stop there. This kind of stuff just perpetuates left and right. Canada, oh, Canada, what happened to Canada? Story out of the National Review, talking about Canada. You may be interested to know, 2 + 2 equals white supremacy. I kid you not. Boomer, do the math here. You ready?
Yes.
I mean, I know you think 2 + 2 = 4.
That's what I would thought.
You were raised that way.
I was.
Mother's a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Things like that in your household are kind of a given.
At least I try.
What you didn't know was the entire time your sweet mother, who I know personally, was raising you as only a godly Christian school teacher woman can do, to believe that 2 + 2 = 4.
Correct.
She was teaching you racism the whole time.
What?
You need to go home and have a discussion.
My mother.
I was saying.
Two plus two equals racism.
You're a grown man now. You can have that conversation. Look her right in the eye.
I'm going to look her right in the eye and ask this.
And say, Mom,
I can't believe you taught me
what
this.
What gives?
Yeah.
That's right. So National Review has a story, 2 + 2 no longer equals 4, according to members of the Ontario Mathematics Coordinators Association. They have an Ontario Mathematics Coordinators Association.
Wow.
Because all God's children need themselves an association.
They do.
All us math coordinators, that's got to be a boring meeting. Can I just step aside and say, oh, we're having the annual meeting of the Ontario Math Coordinators Association. My God. Don't you know?
Make sure you bring your graph book.
That's right. Graph book. Who wants to be the keynote speaker for that one?
Oh, man.
All right. Don't you know they have some hot hors d'oeuvres? All right. According to a webinar created by the Ontario Mathematics Coordinators Association, President Jason Toe, proponents of math's political neutrality who use the phrasing 2 + 2 = 4 are engaging in an act of covert white supremacy. Okay, here's his justification, which, by the way, I find to be obnoxious, pretentious, surreptitious, fallacious, and somewhat suspicious. says Toe's presentation. That was a lot of Scrabble words in one point.
That was a lot.
Okay. Toe's presentation, released in September of last year, features a pyramid of white supremacy in math education. Wow. White supremacy in math education. At the apex of the pyramid, right up there at the top of the little bit point, you have issues of overt white supremacy. They're the ones you would expect, things that anyone would consider racism, things that you just don't want to see happening in life in general. Why they apply to math, I don't know, but they're up there. Here's the deal. The base of the pyramid of white supremacy in math education includes the covert forms of white supremacy in math. Things like using Eurocentric math curriculum. Whatever the frick that means. Standardized testing. Okay. And exhortations to just do things like stick to the math, or I don't see color in my math class, or of course math is neutral because 2 + 2 = 4. So basically, if you're telling somebody, here's the deal, if you're an education proponent, you're tired of woke math or woke curriculum, and you say things like, quit screwing this up, man. I mean, 2 + 2 = 4. You're a racist. By the way, they argue, here's their argument. Supporters of math's political neutrality were oblivious to a deeper point that it's about truth. Who holds the truth? Who decides what is true? And how open are we as a society to multiple truths? Let me do some explaining to you. There are not multiple forms of truth. It's either truth or it ain't. You can't have my truth, your truth, his truth, her truth, it truth, they truth. You don't get that kind of truth. You get truth. There is only one truth, either that or it's still a theory. If it's truth, there's one. If it's truth, it just is. If there's truth, you don't get the luxury of redefining it unless you can find scientific evidence otherwise. And this guy is merely the head of the Ontario Mathematics Coordinators Association. So I'm saying no. It just goes on from there. But that's so race baiters and charlatans, they want you to believe that if they don't like something, that the way they get out of it, around it, fix it, is to cry racism. And I'm going to tell you, this is nuts. I tell you what, Boomer.
Yes.
I believe this qualifies as jackassery.
Oh, it does.
Do we have a sound effect for this? Is there a jackassery sound effect in your repertoire?
I wish there was.
What do you got over there? It sounds a little bit like jackassery. How about?
I'm going to have to find something really good.
We need at least the womp wah.
Yeah, we got the womp wah.
All right, there jackassery. Hit it. Go. All right, there you go. Hey, all right, we're going to take a break right now. We'll come right back and continue with this segment on race baiters and charlatans. And there's a few of them out there. I got more. Like, how about this? Do you know what digital blackface is? Don't you meme the wrong thing, man. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Hey, let me jump over the text line real quick. We're doing a section right now, the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Race Baiters and Charlatans. Race Baiters and Charlatans. Just did a story a moment ago about the recent efforts by the Ontario Math Something Commission. What were they? The Math Coordinators Association. That's what it was. What a absolutely stimulating group that must be. But they have come out with the notion and the training for other members of the Math Coordinators Association that 2 + 2, when you say 2 + 2 = 4, that's covert racism. You just didn't know it. Or maybe you did. Maybe you're subliminally racist, or maybe you're just overtly but yet keeping it kind of on the down low. Just a little racism on the side. just, you know, a little touch of racism to spice up your day and then move forward. Ryan from Hazel Green texted in. He goes, does this mean that black math teachers are now victims of a racist education system forced to teach the material under threat of termination? Just modern-day slavery? Prediction of a new venture in woke world? I can see it, Ryan. That's excellent. So, yeah. Anyway, we'll okay. I just got a text in. Marie from Huntsville says, this is Marie and Madison. So I thought you might be interested to know that although some companies in the private sector are doing away with diversity, equity, and inclusion offices because they know if you go woke, you go broke, the government's not backing off one bit. She said, I found out today that NASA now has its first diversity ambassador. Wow. And we also have a chief scientist and senior climate advisor, and we're checking all the boxes. Compliment of your tax dollars. Wow, Marie. Wow. I know the new mayor of Gadsden just hired a DEI coordinator for the city of Gadsden because that's important. JT from Lacey Springs, I've said earlier that what we're looking at is jackassery, and he says, how can you not have a donkey braying when speaking of jackassery? He's got a point, Boomer. We got to do that, man. I think that's it. I think we're going to find the sound of it. And then we got Dennis from Athens said the same thing, donkey sound, dim jackassery, and he sent a link to a donkey sound. And then you got a call about it, too, didn't you? Who was that? Was that Thomas?
Yeah, Thomas called from Killen, Alabama, and told me the same thing, so I got to get that donkey sound.
All right, it's donkeys.
Donkey.
It's on like Donkey Kong.
He also said I could use it for if we ever talk about Democrats.
Which may still be jackassery.
There we go.
Okay. Mel from Huntsville says, when jackassery won't cover it, there's, well, yeah, he's right. Okay. Brandy from Athens. Just sent me a image of the little cartoon donkey face from Hee Haw. I'd forgotten about that. That's perfect. That could be the image on your button. You know it? Yeah. All right. Cynthia from Claiborne sent in and says, mercy sakes, I'm so sick of these race baiters. They are the true racists. Is she ready for Jesus to come back and take his children home? Cynthia, I would agree. I'm all for rapture theology. I love to believe that since I know Jesus Christ is my Savior, that I'll be one of the ones to go first. Don't want to hang around for no tribulation. Thank you very much. Todd from Madison says, look up Dave Chappelle, Jussie Smollett on YouTube. He was the first to name him Juicy Smalley. Okay. I'm pretty sure we can't play that on the air, not without Boomer having to use the big red button.
That's right.
And then Joe from Athens says, if you don't make your triple dipper, you can call it a double play. Okay. Maybe we'll throw that bone out there and say, yeah. And then one last one before I go back to my articles. Jeremy from Huntsville says, one word to those who believe in multiple truths, consensus. You can see it. Wait. Oh, you can see it if you say the sky is green all you want, but the consensus is it's blue. Okay, fair enough. So you may also be interested to know that there is a way for you to be, you know, on social media. You're just checking things out. You see something you like. You think, that's crazy. So you go find, I don't know, like an image of a black actor or a comedian saying, oh, you crazy. Well, that's not the way it's supposed to work, apparently. Because at that point, you may, in fact, be guilty of digital blackface. I sent a picture of President Obama to someone. Actually shooting a pistol on the range, and it was related to gun control. Apparently, that's digital blackface. I've got another one of somebody, you know, like dancing. Apparently, that's digital blackface. So yes, story on Fox News dated yesterday. CNN analyst John Blake argued that a white person who posts a GIF, a video, or a photo post that contains a black public figure could be perpetuating racism. Really? I got news, dude. If it's out there in the public arena, it probably ain't. But I tell you what, we'll break it down in more detail in a minute because you may want to know how best to avoid digital blackface. That's just important in today's world, apparently. Or it could just be jackassery. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And like the dude just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Hour numero three. So let me just stop there a second and tell you, as we have done this show now for the last year and a half plus, the sponsor that has been with us since the very beginning is still with us right now, ZLA Solutions. ZLA Solutions, you can find their website, ZLAUSA.com. They are a business solutions company. And, man, I'm telling you, they can do all kinds of stuff for you. They can help you with your logistics, your warehousing, your sorting and containment, quality control. But their bread and butter has always been and still is today staffing. And that's temp or direct hire. So if you need people for your workforce, it doesn't matter whether it's onesies and twosies with niche skills or whether it's an entire shift of folks. Blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. I'm just telling you, ZLA Solutions, they just had their biggest year ever. They are still cranking out the staffing for major corporate clients all over North Alabama. Check them out, their website, ZLAUSA.com. See if they can assist you with recruiting, the background checks, drug testing, all of it. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. And do me a favor, tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. All right, so I'm still in number two of the Triple Dipper, race baiters and charlatans. Did we have a call on the line? I thought I saw a call come in. Nope, not yet. All right. So you may want to know what it means to do digital blackface. So yeah, if indeed you do something that has a picture of a black person, a gif of a black person, doesn't matter whether you mean any harm by it or not, the very fact that you do that might be appropriation. We're told by a CNN analyst, John Blake, digital blackface is a practice where white people co-opt online expressions of black imagery, slang, catchphrases, or culture to convey comic relief or express emotions. No, that's just called being funny. I'm sorry. So if a black comedian makes a joke and it's worth repeating, are we not allowed to talk about it unless we're black? Because that's what I'm hearing. If a black figure of any kind, political, actor, whatever, athlete, does something, and it fits the mood of the text message or the social media posting that we're doing, it just fits. I'm pretty sure white people also bought tickets to their public events, or white people voted for them to come into office, or for that matter, white people at the very least saw it and had a chance to participate in the original event, and were not allowed to say anything about it or post a picture. It's cultural appropriation. The critique culminates in slamming this as modern-day repackaging of minstrel shows. Shut up. Boomer, do you have the jackassery sound yet? Not yet? I'm in big need of a jackassery sound effect. I'm just telling you. But yeah, that's just so race baiters and charlatans, y'all. But you'll also be interested to know that up in New York City, this very evening, today, Monday, March 27th, there will be a seminar hosted by the United Federation of Teachers designed to help educators who wish to advance their credentials by participating in a workshop on the harmful effects of whiteness in our lives. Boomer, let me break this to you. I just ready?
Oh, yes.
You're white.
What?
It's true. What? It's true. And by the way, so am I.
Wow.
Just a studio full of cis white males.
We're just cis white males sitting in a studio.
According to the outlet, the United Federation of Teachers, the UFT, has scheduled the online seminar titled Holding the Weight on Whiteness. A course is about, quote, cultural humility and inclusion. and will allow us to discuss how whiteness relates to privilege and identity and how both become normalized and invisible. So basically, you don't realize it, but it's been normalized in some way that you're white.
Normalized?
Normalized, yeah.
I've been normalized because I'm white, or...
or it's normalized that you are white, or that you're immune. I don't know.
It's just normalized.
I'm doing the best I can to keep up with the jackassery, but I can't keep up with it. Oh my gosh. The page lists out key cultural themes. The workshop for teachers will focus on including the themes that the workshop for teachers will focus on, including internalized racism, privilege, microaggressions, and white identity related to Latinx communities. Participants will leave the... Okay. Now, prepare yourself for some gobbledygook. Participants will leave the workshop with a better understanding of how to center ourselves as a form of resistance against the harmful effects of whiteness in our lives, the organizations we work for or direct, and the communities in which we serve. Can I hear the sound of unicorns leaping over rainbows in the distance? There's not a sound effect for that. Oh, my gosh. Race baiters and charlatans. So, all right. Yeah, John from Huntsville texted in and says, digital blackface? And he says, I don't know how to respond to this one. It's just jackassery, John. I mean, what do you do, man? Jim from Madison says, shout out from those of us who watch you live on YouTube. You're looking mighty spiffy today, Phil. Thank you. Yes, I recognize that I am overdressed for radio. Appreciate it very much. What else we got here? NPR laughably claims, by the way, NPR brought to you courtesy of your own tax dollars. NPR laughably claims limited scientific evidence that men can beat women at sports. Boomer. I know that your wife is also an athlete.
Yes, she is.
And I'm pretty sure she could beat you up if she wanted to.
Absolutely.
But generally speaking, men who compete against women in basketball or in MMA fights or in track and field or in swimming, they wind up with a natural advantage. Would that be fair to say?
I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you need a special study to help you understand that?
No.
Would that be a study that would be jackassery from the moment it's commissioned?
Yes.
At the center of the issue, NPR is claiming that there is actually questions as to whether there is a physical advantage in track and field for men who compete against women. I kid you not. The International Governing Body for Track and Field will ban trans women athletes from elite women's competitions, citing a priority for fairness over inclusion, despite limited scientific evidence of physical advantage. These people, I'm pretty sure God loves them anyway, but I'm not pretty sure. I know he does. All right. But I look at this and think, that's still jackassery. It is. That's just, okay. Last thing, what have I got here? I'll finish this one up with this. So you may have heard that race baiters and charlatans, right? So Obama's having trouble getting some of his people confirmed, some of his appointees confirmed to office. The one guy named Phil Washington, who has been up for the FAA nomination, has been totally derailed by a whistleblower who came out after his time in Los Angeles. Phil Washington is allegedly part of a cabal of people who were now being said by a whistleblower to have been helping get pay-for-play kind of contracts in L.A. County government. Yeah. Like one who received a $625,000 settlement, the whistleblower herself is bringing forth evidence that there was a no-bid contract to establish a hotline for sexual harassment, which awarded to one individual now tied to Phil Washington. And this guy, in spite of all of the red flags and despite the fact that he knew nothing about flying, was going to be head of the FAA, according to Biden. I'm sure in some way the fact that he was a black man and a Democrat from liberal California meant all the world to the selection criteria. Maybe he should be honest and, oh, by the way, know how to fly a plane. All right, Boomer, take us to a break. We'll come right back, and we're going to jump over to the third dipper of the day. How y'all like me now coming in all three dippers one day? Military-minded. We're going to switch gears and talk about military readiness and what the state of the world looks like. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative, and just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Hey, let me just tell you guys, before we go too much further, the ELM Foundation, that's E-L-M, E-L-M, it stands for Expect Little Miracles. The ELM Foundation is doing some really, really cool stuff, helping people get back on their feet, become productive members of society, finding their way forward in life. And they're a 501c3, the ELM Foundation is, based out of Huntsville. And unlike the government plan to just sling money at stuff and see what happens, the ELM Foundation is actually out there in the nitty-gritty doing things that joins with other members of the community to help folks to find, you know, a way for higher education and certification programs and other things that target training efforts to get you employable, to help you find ways to get off the street. And literally, they're changing lives, which is just very cool. What I also like is the ELM Foundation, all their operating costs are completely underwritten. So their staff who do great work, they're not having to go raise the money for their own paycheck. That's paid for by one benefactor. Everything else they do at that point, when they raise a dollar as a 501c3, goes into these programs. So I got to say, I love this. And if you want to find out more about them, the ELM Foundation is just, I mean, Expect Little Miracles. What a great name. And you can find them at their website, ELM, E-L-M-H-S-V, as in elmhuntsville.com. I got a phone call coming in right now. I'll take it real quick. We do have a bit of an update, too, on that school shooting in Nashville. So I want to cover that here in just a minute. But is that Kareem? Kareem on line one. What you doing, man?
How you doing today, sir?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Oh, man, it's a wonderful day. It's beautiful. I'm out here. I'm calling because you was talking about the truth. You said they need scientific proof to prove otherwise. That was your words, right?
Wait, on which one? You talking about
that was the last dipper.
Yeah, that was the one talking about itself. The scientific proof of whether men can outpace women in certain sports.
Yeah, I'm talking about this, the truth as a whole, the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
Okay.
Like there are no alternative facts to truth.
So are you going to bring me your truth or are you going to bring me truth?
No, I'm bringing the truth. So, like, I know a boy is a boy, a girl is a girl.
Right.
That's just the truth. No matter what you identify as, that's who we are.
I like it.
You know, man's a man, woman's a woman. So is it also the truth that slavery wasn't the worst part of the African American experience in this country, but after slavery?
Well, I don't know. We're not in science now. You're in social science. I'm not sure that I can scientifically quantify which was worst, actually being in chains or being in social chains.
The truth is the truth because, you know, before when you was a slave, they had to protect their property, so anybody couldn't just do anything they wanted to. You know, I mean, they did anyway in certain circumstances, but you just couldn't do anything because that was other people's property. But then once after they freed the slaves, that's when it really got bad. That's when you had the burnings and the shootings and the killings and the rapes and all of that, you know, for generations, within generations, you know, the Klan coming to your house, pulling the people out. That's when it really started traumatizing the black community as a whole.
Okay, so let me ask you this. I don't disagree that there were definitely, you know, evidences of racism and prejudice throughout our history, but it seems to me that slavery, where you could be bought, sold, controlled, used up, cast aside, killed if they needed to because you're just property. I mean, at that point, you're nothing but a dog on the plantation. But once the slaves were emancipated, even if the laws, I mean, even if people didn't actually enforce the laws, there were still laws in the books that said don't do that anymore.
But it's still, to me and to my whole family, my father, his father, that wasn't the worst part of it. At least slavery, you had some somebody wanted you alive, so you can work.
But now, Kareem,
it was after slavery that came, you know, the transient laws, and then all the way up to Jim Crow.
Okay, but let me ask you a question.
My next door neighbor.
How old are you though?
I'm 50 years old.
Okay, unless you're going to tell me you're 150 years old, then you've never actually experienced slavery yourself, right? So you're going from your experience,
See, that's what I'm talking about. But I didn't have to experience it to know what my father experienced, to know what my father's father experienced. You understand? And we're talking about generations that actually had a chance to meet each other and tell them about what happened. You know, like when the soldiers came home from the war, whether it was World War II or Vietnam, when it was World War II, after they came home, how they was pulled off the bus and shot and hung in public square. That's truth.
Okay, nobody denied that happened. Nobody on the show denied that that's happened. But what I'm saying right now some people out there that—
to tell my children about that? Would I be wrong to tell my children about that stuff happened?
I'm not sure why you're asking me that. No, tell your children about that. I tell my children about that. But the reality is you can't wallow in it. I mean, you can't say that there's a racist under every rock. There's not.
No, you can't. And see, and that's where I think y'all getting the misconception. We saying in spite of all of that, we still here. We still surviving. We still going strong. In spite of all of that. But when you stop to, when you always go to justify as, okay, slavery was a institution. So and that's the way everything was. So, you know, you really can't fall back on that. So I'm like, okay, cool. So what happened after slavery?
I got to ask you, you wanted to talk about my last dipper, but you really just got into the broader claim of race relations.
No,
so,
I'm just talking about the
No, but here's my question for you. How do you get to the point that you say Jim Crow era, which was awful, how do you say that's worse than someone who's actually in chains as a slave? I mean, I have a hard time believing
because
that that's the same
at least
thing.
When you was at least that's when you was in chains, it's like you was in jail. They had to protect their property. But once they let you go, once they said, okay, you're a free man, anybody could do anything they want to do to you.
I can't go with that because even in the Jim Crow era, black folks could go home to their own house at night. They weren't going home to someone else's house at night. They were going home to their home at night. And they may not want get what they want in a social setting or in even a legal setting. And it may be prejudicial. And there was all this, you know, the law was incorrectly styled to say separate but equal because it was never equal. But the reality is it's still not as bad as being chained up and being a slave. I can't see that.
My father, the reason why my father came up north, he had to hide in a ditch under a rock one night he had to spend the night there because the Klan was chasing him. And this is my father.
Well, and that's my father.
He died he was like 75 years old. So what I'm saying, when you have people, when we do see a racist under every rock, because it has not been that far removed.
But you know there's not a racist under every rock. I mean, right? You do know that, right?
Yes, I understand, and I also know.
So I'm a white guy. It doesn't mean that I'm automatically a bad because I'm a white guy, right?
No, and no one is saying that. You see, people will say stuff.
Oh no, some people are saying that
to minimize what's been happening. If it wasn't for the other white people that fought for us, we wouldn't be free.
All right,
I acknowledge that every day.
Kareem, you just took my entire segment. The music's playing, brother. I'm going to a break. all right, man. Appreciate you. I'm not sure where all that was going, but the reality is I don't see the idea of Jim Crow era being worse than slavery. It was bad, but it wasn't worse than actual slavery. All right. I'm not sure how we did that, but I didn't even get started on my third dipper, and I'm going to blame it on Kareem. All right. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
Turn it up.
And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. Picture me another state, by the way, where you've got mountains and rivers and white sandy beaches and dark soil fertile plains. And I'm just saying it's all in one state. Thank you very much, Alabama. And this show goes way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi. Thrown in just for good measure. Hey, so, yeah, we're going to get to this, spend a little time on military stuff here momentarily, talking about readiness and all that in the latter part of the show. I got to tell you, there's a bit of an update. Going back to the beginning of the show, we brought you the fact that we had and it's top story on all the news networks right now, and rightfully so, a school shooting in Nashville. At a school that that Boomer knows personally and coached kids in. But what did we see a minute ago, Boomer? All three of the kids were how old?
I believe they were 9 years old.
Yeah, three. So there are six victims right now, three adults, three kids, and all three of the kids are said to be 9 years old. So that's a tragedy. That story continues to unfold. The White House has already issued a statement. Of course, they went straight to gun control. The police have not issued much more information on the shooter other than it was a 28-year-old female who was apparently armed with two long guns of some type and one pistol. And one story just a moment ago said that, and it appears she had a map of the school, and there was some reason to believe she might have actually been a former student, you know, about 10 years ago. All right, more of that story to come, and we'll update you as things go on. Hey, let me just also suggest to you, as we approach go-home time right now, go-home time for the day, Monday, beautiful spring day. You finally got sunlight lasting into the evening, and you've got leaves on the trees, and the sky is beautiful. And tomorrow morning you're coming in, maybe you celebrate the onset of real spring with stopping at Just Love Coffee Cafe on the way into work. Maybe, just maybe, you say, I ain't doing the speed eating in the car. I ain't doing, oh, by the way, the regular biscuit through the drive-thru. I ain't doing it. No. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations in our listening area, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. Man, do they have coffee? Well, yes, of course they do. It's Just Love Coffee Cafe. But they've got, the treat coffee, Charlene calls them, the cappuccinos, the lattes, the espressos, and then they got award-winning dry roast coffee, grind the beans fresh, make you a steaming cup of black coffee, better than you would ever get out of the nasty break room coffee pot at work. Yeah. But on top of that, they got food like you wouldn't believe, man. Check out their menu, waffles. They got the womlet, a giant omelet. You can expect everything in the world stuffed in, including tater tots, and it's cooked in a waffle iron, hence the W, womlet. And you've got just any number of breakfast biscuits and other things and fruit and all kinds of stuff. Just check it out. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. And tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. So military-minded, that's number three of the Triple Dipper. Military-minded, what am I saying there? I'm thinking we got to make sure that we're focusing. We got to make sure that we recognize, first of all, you know my background to some degree. The military has been a huge piece of my life. I've got family members still on active duty. I've got, you know, my dad was a career officer. My granddad was a career officer. It's been in my blood. And I watch this stuff. And I watch the way things are going right now, and I question the status of where we are, partly out of concern for the future of the country, because the military stands poised to, you know, safeguard the life, limb, and property of the nation, to uphold and defend the Constitution. But then I also look at it and think, how do we stand right now by comparison to where we've been? Well, so first piece I've got here. And I get it. I mean, you could look at this and go, it's self-serving. Well, of course it is. It's the defense.gov. This is the Department of Defense's actual website, issued a statement. Just a couple of days ago, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Army General Mark Milley, told the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee that basically we're at an inflection point. And an inflection point meaning that on the bell curve that we're, and I believe he's saying we're curving up, not curving down. He says the joint forces must balance current operations and readiness with future modernization. We must not allow ourselves to create the false trap that we can either modernize or focus on today. We must do both. So you're going to hear a major push coming up in the next few years in budgeting for increased military spending on force modernization. New equipment, everything from tanks to rifles. Some of it's been in the works. Others, brand spanking new. But in the words of General Milley, he says, our priorities are simple. Maintain high states of readiness while simultaneously modernizing for the future operating environment and taking care of our people and their families. Our end state is that America is secure and great war power is prevented. Readiness now, readiness in the future, through modernization is the number one priority. So my question is, are we there? He believes we're there. He goes on to say, we are at a greater point than we've been in our history. That we have, and I believe we still have the greatest military in the face of the earth and perhaps in the history of the earth. And I still question, can we get it done if there were a major, and this is the term you need to watch for, great war conflict. Great war conflict. So another piece off the Wall Street Journal is basically headlined, despite what we just heard from General Milley, who's going to say this? He's the chairman. He's not going to go up there and go, we're not ready. He's not going to go up there and say, you know, just been thinking and I just don't. He's General Milley's not going to say that. I just know. Now, I recognize that some of what he's saying is absolutely true, but the Wall Street Journal headline, the U.S. is not yet ready for the era of great power conflicts. Over the last 20 years plus, we've been in what many would call coin operations, counterinsurgency, coin operations, asymmetric warfare, conflicts in which we had immediate air superiority because there was no opposing air force or anti-air capability. We go to the world stage and we dominate from day one. And once you take air superiority, the rest of it is it's a ground slugfest, and we got better stuff for the ground war than anybody in the world. However, China and Russia, despite what we're seeing with Russia in Ukraine, do not underestimate their capabilities as being more than the Taliban in Afghanistan. They're not going to be amazed at our technology because they've got a lot of it themselves. And so the Wall Street Journal's point is that they say we're not ready for great power conflict. Well, it's not just the Wall Street Journal. You've got the top Democrat and the top Republican on the House Armed Services Committee saying the same thing. When a Democrat says that under the Democrat administration, you got to wonder. So Representative Adam Smith, the Democrat from Washington, who is the top Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee, said U.S. military readiness right now is a huge problem as global tensions heighten and the war in Ukraine rages on. He said to Shannon Bream on Fox, he said, this is an article off thehill.com, by the way. This is a huge problem. We don't have the industrial base. We don't have the ability to ramp up that industrial base. But the Armed Services ranking member said he and committee chairman Alabama's Representative Mike Rogers share the huge priority to up the country's weapon production capacity as conflict simmers. So it's not just the fact that we missed the recruiting goals for this past year in terms of personnel. It's not just the fact that we see the recruiting pool in terms of capable individuals eligible for service as being lower. It's not just the fact that the Biden administration has made the U.S. military a woke experiment station, a petri dish of wokeness, if you will. And it's not just the fact that on the world stage we keep doing stuff under the Biden administration's policies that make people question our abilities, or for that matter, our wherewithal. You've got the guys who run House Armed Services saying, we don't have right now the industrial capacity to keep up with what we're supplying to Ukraine and what we might need ourselves should a great power conflict erupt. Now, he goes on to say, this is Smith, the Democrat. He's trying to temper his comments. He goes, now, war with China is not inevitable. Well, of course, it's not inevitable. He says, it's a very dangerous situation we need to be prepared for, but I'm fully confident we can avoid that conflict if we take – it depends on what he means by avoidance. The Biden version of avoidance is not one that I'm fond of. But yeah, it's still not a given that we're going to go to war with China. Absolutely. But the question right now is, when I look at Milley saying that we've reached an inflection point, are we military-minded enough to say that we are honestly, honest brokers before Congress, can you say we is or we ain't ready? Well, Milley says we're at a strong point right now. We're doing good. And modernization is the key. Then you read between the lines a little bit, you realize the Democrat on the ranking member of the Democrat Party serving on the House Armed Services. Yeah, we're not ready. Wall Street Journal says we're not ready. In fact, I'm not mistaken. I think it was just this past fall, the Heritage Foundation, for the first time ever, declared us not to be at a state of readiness sufficient. That's the first time that's ever happened. So military-minded. Now, other things happening in the military. We'll come right back from this break, and we'll give you a little something about what's going on with Space Command. Are they going to move Space Command to Huntsville? Are they? Have you heard the latest? Apparently, there's a story out in the Washington Post about what Biden thinks he's going to do now. Yeah. Can you say politics? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right, saving the world, one soundbite at a time. Coming down here to the end of the show, John from Huntsville texted in, Boomer, you'll be happy to know that I get an A+ and you get an A-. I don't know why that is. I say happy to know. It sounds
it's
like
probably
I'm
probably because I can't talk today.
Oh, that would be true. He's over here doing his coughing Barry White impression. As Boomer heads into spring, pollen is not his friend right now.
It is not my friend.
All right. By the way, remind me to tell you about the elixir to drink tonight. Okay. I'll give you the heads up on the elixir. Jeff from Indiana says, feel like we're going to be spending a lot of money on military. He's got to change everything over to battery power so we can have green wars. And can't wait to say that we have to stop the battle to charge up the batteries in the tanks. You know, I'm saying. Colin from Decatur says, interesting that Millie said that we have to take care of service members' families. Both the Congressional Budget Office just proposed cutting VA benefits and assistance to disabled veterans to save money. Glenn from Bluntsville, with regards to readiness, we are not there. They can't even meet recruiting goals. That's what he says, and I'm not disagreeing. Jim from Madison. Shout out, I missed the one. It says, North Carolina has mountains, fertile plains, and white sandy beaches. Just Alabama turned on its side. okay, got it. All right. Jay from Hartzell, he says, a fire burns when you quit stoking it. Same with racism. If the left would quit making it their primary talking point, the division that they're creating would go away. Just love and live, Jay from Hartzell. Appreciate you. All right, let me just move over to the last couple of pieces. Although I will say, Chris from Gadsden said, how dare y'all not be ashamed of your whiteness? I just, you know, I'm just of the belief that God does not make mistakes. So I was supposed to be white, and, you know, here we are. Okay, last two articles in this section, race baiters, military-minded. We're in military-minded. It's something that's flying totally under the radar right now is that just in the last few days, really middle of last week, apparently, there were drone strikes on U.S. basing in Syria. And the Biden administration's response has been, say nothing, say nothing, say nothing, do nothing, do nothing, do nothing. Oh, let's lash out real quick. They can jump out there and claim gun control in a shooting in a school in a heartbeat, but we have troops in harm's way. By the way, it wasn't just drone strikes. One American contractor and was killed. Six service members were wounded. So this was an actual strike that did draw casualties. Republicans, according to townhall.com, dated yesterday, Republicans criticized President Joe Biden's response to drone and rocket attacks in Syria that led to the death of a U.S. contractor and wounded six other Americans. Biden's actions toward the airstrikes highlight his weakness as a president toward the other world leaders. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, said the blame lies on Biden, adding that he let Americans down once again. He says, I fear General Milley and Secretary of Defense Austin are not proven to be up to the task of providing the deterrence that America needs to remain safe. However, the ultimate blame, he says, for the failing foreign policy and military situation we find ourselves in lies with President Biden. Now, there's a couple of other things in here that I was going to get to. What have I got on time? I got a time. I got time to say this. So that kind of weakness on the world stage is made all the more real when you consider what we're finding out now more and more about the pullout from Afghanistan. Now that Republicans are actually chairing the hearings, you're getting to hear other parts of the story. I don't know if you've heard this or not. Daily Caller ran a piece dated yesterday. It says a Marine sniper's testimony that he had an opportunity to take out the Abbey Gates suicide bomber during the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan came as a surprise to family and advocates of one of the service members killed in the attack. So if you're not familiar, here's the deal. What's his name? I'm trying to find the name of the actual guy who testified, and I just lost my place in the article where it says it. But here's the thing. A former Marine sniper who was providing overwatch at the Abbey Gate, which if you think back to the mayhem around the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the Abbey Gate at Kabul International Airport was the scene of the bombing, the suicide bombing that killed 13 service members in that debacle of a pullout. And a Marine sniper now says that he saw what he believed to be the suicide bomber approaching and requested permission to take him out and was not given the authority to do so. It's been classified up to now, apparently, but CENTCOM recently made public the unclassified version of the final report, and family and advocates were for the first time able to hear that a Marine Corps sniper believed he had sight on the suicide bomber and was not allowed to take him out. 13 service members died. Just amazing. Other story in terms of being military-minded, here we are. You know, if you heard the show in the last week or two, I said, you know what? They've actually come out with a fairly decent recruiting ad, the Army had. And it was a pretty actor, Jonathan Majors, was in the ad, and he was basically walking you through his history of people standing in the gap for our nation in various times in our history, like, you know, the Revolution and the Civil War and World War I and World War II, and it was very well done, very well produced. It wasn't like overly stimulating for some reason. It just kind of had a little bit of a lack of an edge, but it was be all you can be. I mean, they used the phrase be all you can be. The ad hadn't been out but maybe, 2 weeks? And the Army had to pull it. They had to pull it because Jonathan Majors himself was just arrested for domestic abuse. And now the Army's got this great production ad they can't use because the guy who's leading the narrative and whose face is visually in the ad was just arrested. And so I'm hoping they're going to redo that one sometime soon. Speaking of the debacle in Afghanistan, Daily Wire has a story that some of y'all need to see. Daily Wire has a story that the Taliban have, by the way, the Taliban, if you didn't know this, has an official Twitter post or Twitter account. Yeah, they do. President Trump just got his back. Taliban's always had theirs. The Taliban just posted a series of photographs showing the massive number of vehicles that were abandoned and left behind that they have been sort of bringing together, repairing, and putting to use. I'm talking military Humvees, trucks, Humvee ambulances, and bragging about how many of them they've got back into operational status, and they are making good use of them, apparently. They have a huge motor pool in their pictures of all the multi millions of dollars of military equipment and vehicles that we abandoned. Lastly, I'll say this. You'll want to know that the Biden administration, according to the Washington Post, is considering not moving Space Command to Huntsville. I kid you not. Why? Well, you know, space is important, and it might be lacking in security if we move it now. What? Okay, well, you know what? Every single member of our U.S. delegation in Alabama has been speaking out pretty hard. Stand by for that one. We'll see if politics has its way. In the meantime, you guys have an amazing night. Boomer and I back here tomorrow, too. We will see you then. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening.